Welcome to Hacking Your ADHD. I'm your host, William Kerb, and I have ADHD. On this podcast, I dig into the tools, tactics, and best practices to help you work with your ADHD brain. Hey team, this week I had a great conversation with Shel Mendelson, a career counselor who specializes in working with adults with ADHD. We talk about how traditional career advice often doesn't work as well with ADHD, how we don't want to dictate success purely on financial outcomes, the importance of deadlines, and whether or not we should consider disclosing our ADHD at work, plus a whole lot more. If you'd like to follow along on the show notes page, you can find that at hackingyouradhd.com/139. Today's podcast is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I was looking for a better way to hit all my nutritional needs, and then it quickly became a staple of my morning routine. And that's really one of my favorite parts of using AG1, just how easy it is and how easily it fits into my life. With one scoop of AG1, I'm getting 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced ingredients, probiotics, and adaptogens to help me start out my day right. It's important to make sure you're getting in a variety of foods into your diet, but with ADHD, I know I'm not always doing that. With AG1, you're giving yourself the nutritional insurance to make sure that your body is getting what it needs every day. AG1 lets me offload having to worry about what I'm eating every day and lets me focus on the things that I already want to be focusing on. Right now, it's a time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/ADHD. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/ADHD to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, keep on listening to find out what color your ADHD parachute is. All right. Well, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and about your journey with getting into career counseling for ADHD?
Well, I didn't start out with career counseling with ADHD. I started out as in a master's program in counseling close to 35 years ago. I've been around for quite a while. And even my own journey in making that decision was recognizing that I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But when somebody asked me, what do you really want to do with concern and love? Then for some reason, it just clicked in. I want to help people. And I just got on this journey to get into a counseling program. Got into vocational rehabilitation because they, at the time, they had the best employment record of people with master's degrees. So I was very practical. I was 29 at the time. And I just wanted to go to work, right? But I knew what I wanted to work in as a counselor, but I wasn't sure about what voc rehab was until I realized it was working with people with disabilities to find ways to get them into positions that would meet within their limitations. So it was very career focused, and I grew to really love that. I did it for 10 years. And then I burnt out on it because I was working in the workers' compensation system. And I say because what I realized is that I didn't like the system itself. The system stopped working for me. So I began to get additional training and doing things but also by that time, I was working independently. I had my own business as a sole practitioner. That's when I got training from Richard Bowles, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute? Mm. And I was trained directly by him. And it was the best, most life-changing experience I ever had. And I went through the process and to identify my career direction. And even though I knew that I wanted to do career counseling at the time, it came up not once, but twice for me. So I was pretty clear that I was in the right field and I was headed in the right direction. And I did continue to do that. And mind you, I was undiagnosed the entire time. Mm-hmm. Undiagnosed. So I went off and did, as many of us do, entrepreneurial kinds of endeavors, things that seemed important, started a franchise system that became international in 15 countries and 39 states. And I did that when I was a stay-at-home mom, when my son was very young. And I crashed and burned as the CEO of that company, not realizing that I was not even following my own advice at that point. I had created this horrific system for myself called a corporation, and I had to work within it and answer to people that I wasn't no longer comfortable answering to. And it just started to crash and burn on me. I was still undiagnosed. And when I got out of that, and when I started doing the career counseling again after that, I was so happy. And I felt this huge weight lifted off my shoulders. And I knew I was coming home to doing what I was supposed to be doing. And that was what drove me to get the diagnosis, because I knew, what is wrong with me? I'm the only one who seems to be to have this way of thinking. Nobody's getting it. You know, people with ADHD, before we get that diagnosis, we don't really understand why the people around us don't get the way we think and the way we do things. They don't get it. And that was, I was experiencing that to the point where it was becoming devastating for me.
Yeah. So often with before diagnosis, you're just like, I'm trying hard, but I don't, why isn't making results? What am I doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong? And when I started, I started this whole company, of course, our brains were very creative. I loved putting the company together. It was a children's art franchise. My son was very young and he was artistic, and there weren't any art programs out there. So I found all the people needed to put the damn thing together, and it worked great. I was like the hottest salesperson of franchises out there, but I was also in another system called franchising that I grew to dislike and realize that it wasn't my system to work in, right? So there were many things that drove me to get the diagnosis once I realized that nothing was working. And I literally crawled over to a book that a friend of mine who was a therapist had sent me. I think it was by either Dr. Amen or Halliwell, one of the two. Mm-hmm. It was sitting on my bookshelf. I crawled right over to it. I don't know why. I grabbed it. I started reading. Before I had put it in, she sent it to me and I just laughed and put it in the drawer. Mm-hmm. And once I started reading it, of course, I had the experience that many of us have when we realize, oh, we're not the only ones out there, right?
Yeah.
We're not alone. It explains so much. So you go through the grieving, I went through the whole, process of grieving, not having known, and then having to accept, like, I hadn't yet been diagnosed, but I did get diagnosed shortly there. Of course, not a revelation, because I already knew from doing the checklist and reading the book that, yes, this was what was going on for me. But at that point, I've been working with neurodiverse populations in career. I was doing career coaching. I still love career coaching, but I realized that, oh my gosh, look at what I went through. And I just had this strong, strong desire just to focus solely on our population. And that was when I just made ADHD adults the target market for myself to help navigate this crazy career circus that a lot of people find themselves in. I had the system, which was based on Parachute, that had worked very well for the people. But now I realized that there were pieces of it that needed to be tweaked for our population. And I spent over the next few years, I started developing a way to provide my career services on that platform.
Yeah, because there's so much advice that's out there on how to do career stuff, but not so much focused just on ADHD and, being a little bit different. And often we go, okay, I'm just going to do what the advice is and it doesn't work for us. And then we go, well, it's me that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's so often that we just have to do something a little bit different. It, maybe sometimes a lot different, but often it's just, you know, like tangentially, okay, you just need to focus on these things instead of these things.
Yeah, exactly. But we do, one of the things that most people who need career direction and have never had proper career direction, coaching or advice, basically, feel like, they need some kind of a process to work within. And this provides the process that I love doing. I mean, I love doing this process. But it unless you know what that is, there's going to be a lot of resistance and wrong advice given to people with ADHD. And we need to have things broken down. Mm-hmm. We need to have some kind of a structure to recognize and learn about who we are with ADHD in with respect to our career. And we need still to allow for some of that creativity. And we need somehow to still be resistant a little bit to that resistance is always going to be there. And Richard Bowles calls it the safekeeping self. And I, when I first started working with a group of adults with ADHD in this process, they all said, they gave me the feedback that that safekeeping self or resistant part of us is the biggest piece of what you do. And so even though over the years, Bowles had kind of in the book not really talked about that element, it then I realized it was one of the major pieces that had to be addressed was why do we resist so much? Mm-hmm. The idea of making changes in our career or the idea of looking at what pleases us, what we need, what our preferences are. Why are we so resistant to that? And that's what comes up a lot with the people I work with. And I'm there for it. I really am, because I know the importance of breaking through that. Once you break through it and you really start to honor who you are and honor your preferences, it's a whole other experience. So.
Yeah. Earlier, I also heard you mention, you know, going through your own programs and realizing you're heading in the right direction. And I feel like that's such a hard thing for us to do too, because we're like, we have so many interests. We're like, we could go any direction, but we don't know which one.
Exactly. And there needs to be a way to allow what I call the cream to rise to the top. Mm-hmm. And that actually comes through the parachute process. Where the cream, you see repetition of ideas, you see answers that keep coming up over and over again to the point where you may have ignored it. And even stuff that when you were a kid, you might have thought about, right? You can't ignore it anymore because now you're in this process where you need to be authentic and real and say, okay, but everyone told me I can't make any money if people try and, you know, manipulate the process. And I go, if you do that, you're not going to get, it's not going to work for you. Mm. If you try and manipulate it, it will not work. Being authentic and real and learning how to just face who you are in a good way, recognize who you are and accept who you are is the only way that you're going to move past all of that.
That's making me just think that there's also a big piece of like unmasking during this process too.
Yeah, there's a lot of unmasking. Usually it's what people are not used to looking at career from this perspective. Hardly anyone is, let alone people with ADHD, right? And with ADHD, we're often, if we're in the wrong job, I mean, we're facing all kinds of criticism and, you know, people telling us the way it should be and how we should be doing things and why can't we just do it this way and why can't we just do it that way? And what does that do? How does that help? Truthfully, they're in the wrong job. When you're in the wrong job, those things are going to happen. It may be sometimes you can get away with it for a while and try and fit yourself into that job or that process, but at some point, the dam's going to burst and you're going to start making the mistakes and you're going to start getting burned out or whatever term you want to use, losing energy. you know, coming in late, all kinds of things happen, right? I think anyone listening who's been in that situation, and we all have, I've been there too. Boy, have I been there. So we all understand what it's like to be in that situation, right?
Yeah, because we can push through things for a little while, but it's not good to make that the status quo.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not good. But I think what happens is people sort of feel like they don't have any choice. And money often has a lot to do with it. But what they don't realize is that continuing without looking for alternatives to alternative avenues is more detrimental financially. And what they don't realize is they've already spent thousands and thousands of dollars on maybe a college degree that didn't take them where they wanted to go, or didn't get them the job they wanted to get, and they keep taking, we all do this. We all keep taking classes, right? So they just money, we just expel how much money financially, and we're so concerned we're not going to make the right amount of money. And yet if you don't allow yourself to really explore all the possibilities and then bring it on down to what's realistic and possible, then you're going to end up doing the same thing over and over again. It's just a cycle of repetition.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we as a society have a big problem with basing success purely on the financial outcome, which
that doesn't work after a while. I mean, if we're doing something that we really hate doing, we're going to either end up getting fired or bored. You name it, making the mistakes, getting called on the carpet, being put. I mean, I've had engineers, I've had doctors, I've had lawyers, you know, all the typical professions that require a great deal of education with people with ADHD. It doesn't work anymore because they're just not in the right position. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, and yeah, money is a big factor, and we do talk about that, but we look at it from a lot of different perspectives. And what happens is that once you start, your mind starts sort of moving in the direction of, it is possible to do something I really enjoy that's going to take me into account. Opportunities start coming along. You're more open to possibilities of things that could come along. And that happens a lot. And very often people end up making more money. Not, you know, this isn't straight across the board, but I've had people in the class who ended up, you know, somebody who made 40% more and what came in super skeptical and ended up in a position that was so much closer to where he wanted to be. It was like the first move. I always call it the first move. It's not going to always take you to exactly where you ultimately want to go, but it's the first step, right?
Yeah.
I see people making more money or people knowing that, yes, it's possible, which has its value in itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing that certain possibilities are really out there.
Yeah. Well, and often we see, like, you know, someone successful and we look at their career path and it's like, oh, this step led to this, to this, to this, to this. But that's because we didn't see all the other branches they could have taken to that same place.
I love that image. I use that image of a tree. Like, the foundation of the work that we do is the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the tree trunk, and I have this image that actually we use when we're talking about choosing the field. We call it the field of fascination, mm-hmm. which is your primary field. Upon which other fields may come out as branches or leaves or pieces. It may develop and go off into all kinds of directions. And that's what happened in my career. I always stayed in the field of education. I've always been in that field, but I've done counseling, coaching, franchising. I've done all kinds of business. I've been, you know, in business, self-employment, podcasting, you know, being on interviews, doing telesummits. I created a whole telesummit at one point. So I've been an interviewer. I've been a writer. I've written tons of articles. And so all kinds of things can come out of that and take you into all different directions. And just FYI, I'll just say one of the things that I just did and I'm waiting to hear about is I pitched the idea of a workbook for ADHD adults that based on Parachute to the editors of Parachute a week ago. And I'm waiting to hear. They were excited. So we'll see what happens.
That's really cool. Yeah. Because
Yeah.
Again, we need things a little bit different. I guess we could go a little bit into that. Like, why can't we follow that typical career advice? I mean, we've touched on it a bit.
It comes back to the safekeeping self, number one, mm-hmm. and knowing what you want, number two. So you can't really move past that part that keeps you safe. And that's the I can't, I won't, I shouldn't. That's the resistant part of us, right? So we have that resistance when everybody is telling us, why don't you try this? Or have you thought about doing that? Or you're so good at this. Makes sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
You're so good at this. Have you ever thought of doing this? And what do our brains do with ADHD?
Well, if I'm good at it, it must not be hard to do or valuable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but do I really want to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the second piece comes in, but I don't want to, you know, I just don't want to do that. Thank you very much for your advice. But when it keeps coming at you, especially if you have a spouse who's feeling the pinch of you not figuring out what you want to do yet, right? Or you have parents who are saying, why aren't you further along in your career? You have people just judging you all the time and getting in your head. That's a lot of where the resistance comes from. It's not listening to what your own needs are in the work that you do. That's not an easy thing. It's not an easy assignment. The older you are, the tougher it is too. It's easier when you're younger and you don't have as much quote unquote baggage. Mm-hmm. You know, the jobs where all these things have occurred, you maybe just come out of school and you're just starting fresh. But for as an adult who's been through the ringer, over the years, it can be very difficult to think that anything is really possible. When it is, it is.
This is reminding me of my friend Brenda Mahan's Wall of Awful. We have these, you know, the bricks in the wall built up as you do stuff. And I'm like, that's exactly what's happening here. We're having all this job experience that creates this wall you can't do anything different.
Yeah. And there's also, but there's that part of our brains that many of us don't like taking instruction from other people, or we don't even like having a boss tell us what to do, mm-hmm. right? So there's that resistance too. And if we're constantly going for positions where we have a manager and then there's no control of who that manager is, and then one manager could be somebody who gives you all this freedom and flexibility and trusts you to get your work done, but the other one's a micromanager. That can be a problem, right? That could be a real problem. So knowing what you want and being able to ask these kinds of questions in the interview before you commit to putting yourself back into one of those situations is really important. Being able to say, this is what works for me. This is what doesn't work for me. Not necessarily saying those words, but having that when you come into an interview, you just come in with that confidence of knowing what you want. And when you do, you're able to ask the right questions.
What are some of those questions? Because I know, I mean, I was thinking about this with my wife the other night. Like, I have not had a traditional job in a very long time at this point. But I do remember the times that I have interviewed it. They're like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, should I?
You absolutely should.
Yeah.
You should have a lot of questions. Yes, you should have a lot of questions. Well, some of them are, can you tell me a little bit about the culture of the company? Is there a structure? Is there a dress code? Because if you're the kind of person that likes to dress informally and really hates getting dressed up and feeling like, why should I spend all this money to have to get dressed up and go to this place just for decorum or whatever? Mm-hmm. That's not going to work. So you need to be able to ask those questions. And the biggest question I recommend that people ask, is this is one kind of for the books, really, is the job I'm applying for today the job I will be doing on day one?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Day one. Not a year from now, not 6 months from now, but on day one. Because, you know, we talked a little bit about this, the old bait and switch thing, right?
Yeah.
Employers hire you to do one thing and they go, well, we want to see how you work out in this situation first, or just have you do this for a few weeks, a few months or whatever. And it's completely different from what you thought the actual job was going to be. And in fact, is triggering in a lot of ways, or can be triggering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not going to work. So if they can't answer that question with a straight face, I like to empower people enough in working with them to be able to say, thank you, but I don't think this is going to be a good fit.
Yeah.
Because they're worried about finances. They're going to be more worried if they get fired from that job, or if they walk out on that job, and then that reference is not going to be there in that time. Spent is going to be like going backwards, right?
Yeah.
So it means facing a few of the concerns that you may have had in the past kind of head on, with being armed with knowing what you want. And when you can articulate that, and you articulate it in a win-win kind of way, like when I am in this kind of situation, when I'm able to say, get up and walk around when I need to, or when I have headphones where I'm playing classical music or whatever, or I have whatever it is that you need available to you, you're going to get the very best out of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do the best job you've ever seen in this position.
Yeah.
And you can honestly say that, right? But if you don't express that to them, how are they going to know?
Brings up an idea for me that I know is kind of a bit hot button in the community, is whether or not you should be disclosing your ADHD. And this is also making me think also about asking for accommodations at this time too.
Yeah, I wouldn't couch it in asking for accommodations. I would say when I have the ability to, and when I have these kinds of the things available to me, like a desk where I can have maybe one or two computer or laptops. Some people like to have more than one laptop, you know, all of those things, then you're going to get the best work out of me. You're going to get the best employer or employee. Right.
Yeah.
But I always say, try self-accommodation, which is a word I kind of made up one time. I sent it to Attitude Magazine and they let me write a whole article on it. So if anyone wants to see that article, you can look it up on Attitude Magazine. It's in there in the archives somewhere. But in order to really decide and what is important to you accommodation-wise, you need to be very clear for yourself and be able to name all the things that are important to you. And I do an exercise, which is, it's like the polar opposite. You start out with a blank piece of paper, put a line down the middle of it. On the left-hand side, put working conditions I dislike or hate. You can use the strongest language you want.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side would be the plus, like, how would that look from my positive perspective, which means the other side of it isn't necessarily the same for everyone, even though the condition might seem familiar.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give an example of that. Micromanaging.
Yeah.
Okay, that comes up, obviously. And a culture where, think about cultures where, what is the kind of culture that you've been in that has been absolutely horrific for you? And just list everything about that culture you can imagine. So just go, I tell people, have fun with that part of it. Really get into it. What are the working conditions that you dislike, hate, whatever you want to call it? And then go back to the top And next to each condition, go over to the right-hand side and say, what would be the other side of that for you? For example, micromanaging or a company that fosters micromanaging in some way, an environment that allows flexibility. I can get up and walk around when I need to. I am trusted when I'm given a project. I mean, there are different answers to that for everybody. They give me a project. I'm trusted to get it done without somebody looking over my shoulder. I'm given a reasonable deadline and I'm given good instructions and allowed to let go. So there are different answers to that question for everybody.
Yeah.
So on one side, it's one thing. On the other side, it could be different for everybody else. But list all those things and then put that right-hand side into a context, for example, or give an example. Mm-hmm. For example, like I said, the project one, I'm given the project and they allow me to do it. So try and put it in some kind of a context.
And I think that's also a place we have to be very honest with ourselves, because we might be like, I hate working for a deadline, but do I get work done if I don't have a deadline?
Exactly. I need I love deadlines myself. I mean, some people with ADHD like me love deadlines. It's like, boy, you give me a deadline, if I have 3 weeks down the road, it's done in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want that. I am not comfortable with waiting till the last minute at all. It takes me forever to get stuff done. So I know that about myself and I just start working on stuff and I just don't want to be put in that position. It's too uncomfortable. So I weigh the discomfort out of waiting till the last minute with waiting till the last minute and having the discomfort of like, oh my God, not being prepared. I don't know about you, but if I'm not prepared, like if I'm giving some kind of a talk or something and I'm not quite prepared and I think, oh, I got it. I got this managed, right? And then something's, you know, I look out at the crowd and I get paralyzed or something like that. You know, it's because I haven't prepared. So anyway,
because I work. I won't do work if I don't have a deadline. Like I've had been working on projects with friends, and they're like, "Yeah, get it to me when you can." And I'm like, "Please don't say that. I can't. I will never get this to you then."
Yeah, exactly.
And I will feel terrible about it the entire time.
Yeah, you got it. Reasonable, I say reasonable deadlines, ones that are doable, mm-hmm. not like yesterday kind of deadlines.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, no. But like doing the pod, you know, setting up a time to speak of the podcast and knowing what questions I'm going to have thrown at me or whatever, or have some idea of that, that gives me plenty of opportunity to know what I'm going to say, or at least have some idea of what I'm going to say. So yeah, I got to have some kind of an idea. And if I end up editing this workbook, they're going to be giving me deadlines.
Yeah.
They're going to be giving me deadlines and I got to get used to that. So I like it. I actually like it.
For me, deadlines are critical. Can't not have them, but
yeah,
there's, you know, I'm like, I have to do this by this time. And I don't want to do for things I don't want to do.
Exactly. I've worked with quite a few people who say they don't like deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And people listening might say that. I don't really like deadlines. So maybe what I would recommend is put, like, if you have a deadline that is reasonable, what would you consider reasonable? Ask yourself that. Well, and do you feel that if it's reasonable, you're going to wait till the last minute? Because that's just knowing who you are, knowing yourself, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, just ask yourself a few questions about that.
Yeah. And I mean, I often see deadlines is, since we can have so much trouble prioritizing things, it's just a way to help you figure out, hey, this needs to be done by this time. That places it kind of here on the priority hierarchy.
Exactly. Yeah. So knowing the level of importance, you know this with our brain, if it's important, we're going to get it done if we want to do it. Wanting to do stuff is a big deal for us.
Mm-hmm.
We got to want to do it.
Yeah.
That's why it's important to know what you want in your work as well.
Yeah. So I just wanted to touch again on the disclosure piece.
Exactly.
Something that a lot of people have a lot of trouble with.
Yeah, we got off on a tangent, didn't we? Oh, how unusual for people with ADHD.
Right.
Anyway. So, yeah, overall, I like to say, not if you do a self-accommodation process first and speak from a win-win position with your employer, have that conversation. How can we make it better? Here's what we can do kind of thing to make this really a positive experience. And if we make these changes, maybe so-and-so can do these tasks and I'll take on these tasks. Or if you kind of do that self-accommodation process first, and for whatever reason that doesn't work, the second question I would ask myself is, do you want to work for employers who aren't willing to be flexible and work with you? You know, what kind of toll is that taking on you? You see how I'm kind of getting away from the telling people you want accommodations. I haven't heard too many people who have asked for accommodations that actually got those accommodations and the actual accommodations they wanted. And after that point, it became known that they had ADHD, even though they didn't have to tell everyone they had it because they were able to do the job. And then for people who don't understand what our brain, like we were just having this conversation. No, people without ADHD don't understand what it's like to have ADHD and what we experience. And yet, now everybody is labeling you and giving you the side eye, you know, and your coworkers maybe treating you a little bit differently. Is it worth it? But also the next question is it worth it for me to continue working for this employer? Is this a win-win for me?
Yeah.
And it seems like if the employer is not going to be willing to do anything to help you navigate the job so that it is a win-win for both you and for them, mm-hmm. then maybe it's time to take a look at that. Is this the right fit for me?
Yeah. And I can see how that also leads a lot of people with ADHD to be pursuing entrepreneurship.
Exactly. Well, entrepreneurship, I always define that a little bit differently than a lot of people. For me, there's self-employment and then there's entrepreneurship. Now, people that are entrepreneurs are self-employed, but I'm a sole practitioner. I'm not an entrepreneur in the work that I do. I didn't invent this, you know, I didn't invent kind of entrepreneurial within the work that I do, but the work that I do is pretty straightforward with people. Now I see, I was also an entrepreneur where I developed the franchise system where it came to me in my sleep. One day I woke up with this idea and boom, it's international, right? After a few years. Because yeah. We are very creative thinkers and we have ideas. And how much we follow through with those ideas is really dependent on how motivated or how much energy is behind the idea of getting it done, right? So I view entrepreneurship as kind of a new paradigm for like a service or a product, mm-hmm. you know, looking at things from that haven't been done before, or maybe a different version of something, and creating it and developing a team, having a team of people that you're working with. And very often it involves fundraising, which I've tried doing and I hate, no, I will never do that again. So that I see it as more like a whole bigger picture thing of creating this whole new thing in a product or service. And with sole practitioner, I took what I had already been doing and just recreate, you know, didn't recreate it, just do that. You know, I work with clients that I've been, so that's a little bit different. But yeah, very often you can take something if you have the ability and you're comfortable with marketing and you're comfortable with sales, and nobody, very few people are. Some people, although the salespeople would be, salespeople would probably be great solo practitioners and entrepreneurs, because they can sell. I say that's the one thing you really need to have under your belt is the comfort level in selling whatever it is that you do in a way that's authentic, right? Mm-hmm. So, we are attracted to doing those things because we don't like taking, we like to do our own thing. And what form that takes is different for everybody. So it's not always the right path, but it's different for everybody. Many of the people I work with, they don't want to do that. They want to go back. They want to work for an employer because they're not, they need the steady income. They have different reasons for wanting to do that. They've got families, they've got whatever. So we look at what I always say is if you're going to work for somebody else, you're always going to be subject to whatever decisions that company makes in terms of employees. Like you're always, you might have different employee people supervising you. You may have different coworkers. You may have departments that are eliminated. You may have consolidation of companies, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is, you have no control over that. You do have more control when you are working as, like I am. I have control over virtually everything that I do. And you do too, it seems like, yeah. Right? You can pick your hours. You can pick who you talk to. You can pick your subjects. You can pick, you know, you've got creative control over what you're doing. That's how I am. And I like that. I like that.
I mean, it's the blessing and the curse of the ADHD there. I'm like, I can really express my creativity. And then, you know, sometimes get blocked because I have too many choices.
Too many choices. I do the same thing. I'm thinking of like five other things I might want to do. I think the good news for me is that I am old enough and I've been through enough ups and downs to really understand how that I can't take on more than one or two things and actually get it done. And I know how to prioritize. And that's a big piece of the work that I think a lot of people, you know, you always hear, and when I was listening to that podcast, they were talking about prioritizing. Mm-hmm. And I go, I've got a tool for that that really works really well. And it was developed by Richard Boll called the prioritizing grid. And I have you can look it up, the prioritizing grid. It is really the best tool ever for figuring out what comes first, what comes second, what comes third, and then making the decision to take one or two of those things at a time.
Biggest problem is being like, okay, I've done this, but I still want to do this other thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe do that other thing and take something else off the list, but really try and limit yourself.
Yeah, I mean, prioritize knowing what makes you happy and knowing what you want. Like, do I want to do this more than this? Those are really good questions to ask yourself all the time. What would be the most fun? Because when it's more fun, you know, it's really going to get done in a way that is unique to you. And it's just going to get done because you're having fun doing it. Not everything is fun. But the other thing is it something I just want to get off my plate? Yeah. So I don't have to think about it anymore, right? And then I can get on to doing the next thing.
All right. Well, yeah. We're kind of coming up on time here, but that flew by for me. So if people wanted to find out more about your career coaching, and you have to have a career coaching masterclass,
yeah,
stuff, where can they go and find more about you?
They can go to www.careercoachingwithshell.com. And you'll see a little video. It's a real short video that talks about the masterclass. The masterclass is the baseline for working with me. I don't care what level of anything you're at. If you're still trying to decide what you want to do career direction wise, that is the first step.
Awesome.
And you'll find my phone number. You can call me, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, and I'll have links to all that in the show notes so people can find you pretty easily. And I appreciate the conversation so much. It was great.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you.
thanks again to Shell for coming on the podcast. We'll definitely have to have her back for a round two at some point. Felt like we only scratched the surface today. And be sure to check out Shell's website, passiontocareer.com, if you want to see more about what she does or are interested in getting some coaching. Before you go, though, let's do a quick rundown of today's top tips. 1. Traditional career advice doesn't always work for people with ADHD. Many of us with ADHD often have difficulty finding the right job because we can feel resistance to taking instruction and often need accommodations to do our best work. 2. When considering disclosing your ADHD at work, it's often better to consider a self-accommodation process first and then having a win-win conversation with your boss about how you do your best work. 3. When considering entrepreneurship and self-employment, it is important to weigh the pros and cons of being your own boss. While we can focus more on what makes us happy, we also have to find a balance with prioritizing our most important tasks. That's it. Thanks for listening. I'd love to hear what you thought of this episode. You can leave me a message over at hackingyouradhd.com/contact. You can also reach me on Twitter at hackingyouradhd, and I've also just launched a TikTok channel that you can find by searching for Hacking Your ADHD. If you'd like links or to read this episode's transcript, you can find those on the show notes page at hackingyouradhd.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, the best way is to share episodes with someone you think would get something out of it. Just click the share button on your podcast player and send your bestie the link with something like, "Hey, I loved this episode of Hacking Your ADHD. I'd bet you'd get a lot out of it too." Or you can support the show through my Patreon at hackingyouradhd.com/Patreon. Sign up for the $2, $5, $10, $25, or even $50 a month level and get some great perks like monthly bonus content or early access to upcoming episodes. That's hackingyouradhd.com/Patreon. And be sure to check out all the other podcasts on the ADHD Rewired Podcast Network. For interviews with fellow ADHDers and ADHD experts, check out Eric Tiver's show, ADHD Rewired. For those of you with kids, be sure to check out Brendan Mahan's show, ADHD Essentials. And even if you don't have kids, his show is still a great resource for ADHD management. If you're interested in exploring issues of race and diversity in ADHD, be sure to check out ADHD Diversified with MJ. I also do a live Q&A with all the hosts of the ADHD Rewired Podcast Network on the second Tuesday of the month at 10:30 a.m. Pacific. If you'd like to sign up, just go to ADHDRewired.com/events. And now for your moment of dad. If you spell the words absolutely nothing backwards, you get which coincidentally means absolutely nothing.